morning, Hutchings v. U.S. Pastrana.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Melissa Pastrana from the law firm of Mayor Brown. Your Honors, Petitioner Kevin Hutchings faced a life sentence regardless of whether he was convicted at trial or he pled guilty. The only way that he could avoid dying in prison was to go to trial and be acquitted. But he chose to forego that chance and instead pled guilty. And the question is why? No rational defendant, and certainly no well-advised defendant, would plead to a life sentence and forego a chance of acquittal when a life sentence or a guilty plea would both result in him serving the same life sentence. Petitioner Hutchings pled guilty because his lawyer told him that if he did so, he would initially receive a life sentence, but that the sentence would then be reduced to 20 to 25 years. His lawyer submitted an affidavit in the district court in which he conspicuously failed to deny petitioner's version of the advice he received from his attorney.
What did he do when he was under oath, though?
Your Honor, when he was under oath, the district court asked him if there was a plea agreement, and petitioner responded that there was not.
And he didn't receive any promises?
That's correct, Your Honor. However, petitioner also argued to the district court that his attorney had told him that the future sentence reduction needed to be kept a secret. His lawyer advised him that the government did not want to appear to be soft on crime, and that if the deal were publicized...
Nor the court.
I'm sorry?
Nor the court.
Correct. We believe that Hutchins' statement at the Rule 11 colloquy was perfectly consistent with this advice. And in any event, Your Honor, if Mr. Hutchings was somehow confused as to what he ought to have answered to that question, it was certainly the lawyer's obligation to step forward and say to the district court that there was, in fact, some agreement that would result in a future sentence reduction. And that did not happen.
Do you know whether Hutchings entered into cooperation agreements in any of his previous cases?
I do not know that, Your Honor. I'm sorry. That was not in the record.
And didn't Attorney Wirtz represent to his client that the government motion would only come in if he were to give over substantial assistance?
Your Honor, that is not Mr. Hutchings' position. Mr. Hutchings argued to the district court that he believed that the future sentence reduction was guaranteed. Now, the government has taken the position, certainly, that Mr. Hutchings must have known that there would be some element of judgment that would be need to be applied to his cooperation, that somebody would need to ascertain whether Mr. Hutchings had, in fact, provided sufficient cooperation to qualify for a sentence reduction. But there's no evidence in the record that Mr. Hutchings actually knew that point. And certainly, one cannot charge Mr. Hutchings with evidence, with knowledge that he was never given. But I think, Your Honor's question highlights an important fact, which is that the evidence before the district court was uncontradicted on this point. Mr. Hutchings submitted a memorandum in support of his 2255 motion, which gave no indication that he understood that there was a subjective element that would be judged as to his cooperation. The affidavit of the lawyer does not contradict this point.
Wasn't there some discussion during the colloquy with the defendant that indeed the government could possibly do that under it?
During the Rule 11 colloquy, that's correct. The government said it is possible we could come back for a future Rule 35 reduction. But that comment took place in the context of the court talking about the fact that the life sentence, it had to impose a mandatory life sentence. And again, Your Honor, I believe that this statement and Mr. Hutchings' response to it was consistent with the advice he received from his attorney, which was that the future sentence reduction was contingent upon it being a secret, on the QT, as Mr. Hutchings described it in his memorandum. I think all these questions highlight a crucial point, which I'm going to reiterate, which is that the account of the lawyer's advice before the district court was uncontradicted. Mr. Hutchings' attorney did submit an affidavit, but he conspicuously did not deny Mr. Hutchings' account of the advice he received. Therefore, the government does not, because it cannot, challenge Mr. Hutchings' account of his lawyer's advice.
So are you seeking then a hearing?
Your Honor, we believe there's sufficient evidence in the record to vacate the sentence pursuant to 2255. However, certainly a hearing also should have been held because 2255 does require a hearing unless the records and files conclusively show that the petitioner is entitled to no relief, and certainly that was not the case here. In the first place, as this discussion has just pointed out, Mr. Hutchings' account of his attorney's advice was unrefuted. And in the face of that, even if there had been a contradiction, even if the attorney had submitted an affidavit and contradicted that account, that would have created a factual dispute, and that would have necessitated a hearing. But we don't even get to that level here because the affidavit of the lawyer is silent on this point. So certainly, Your Honor, a hearing should have been held. But in the face of the uncontradicted evidence now before you, I believe that the record's sufficient to vacate the sentence. The government's... I'm sorry?
Vacate the sentence?
Yes,
sir.
Vacate the plea. I'm sorry. Thank you.
So it would be the conviction. So you're essentially asking for, maybe we go back, we vacate the conviction and go back for a new trial.
That's correct.
Trial or for a new plea.
That's correct, Your Honor. Our position is that Mr. Hutchings entered the plea involuntarily because he did so as a result of the erroneous advice he received from his attorney. Mr. Hutchings argued to the district court that had he not been falsely told that the sentence would be reduced from life to 20 to 25 years, he would have gone to trial. He said he never intended to plead to a life sentence, and after all, why would he? That makes no sense.
Well, he was 45 when he pled, right?
He was 47, Your Honor.
47. And he got received, purportedly would receive 20 to 25 under the, as he indicates.
Yes, sir. By my math, and I'm not a mathematician, but by my math, if he received 20 to 25 years, he could have expected to be out of prison around the age of 70. And a man Mr. Hutchings' age at the time he pled would have had a life expectancy of approximately 83 years. So what that boils down to is that would somebody forego the chance at 13 years of freedom to plead guilty to a life sentence? And I don't think the record offers any explanation as to why Mr. Hutchings would have done that. Your Honors, the government's chief argument is that essentially petitioner's 2255 motion ought to be ignored because he purportedly signed a piece of paper in the wrong place. But the government never raised this technical argument below, and the district court, which is under an independent obligation to evaluate the merits of the 2255 motion, never identified any problem with Mr. Hutchings moving papers. Having failed to present this claim to the district court, the government's chief argument is now waived on appeal. The government is left with its claim that the conduct of petitioner's lawyer, which the government concedes is an error, is somehow harmless, even in the context of a life until death sentence, because according to the government, the only error was telling petitioner that a future sentence was guaranteed, when in fact it was entirely within the government's discretion pursuant to Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 35. But neither in its briefs here nor before the district court did the government ever present any evidence that petitioner failed to provide substantial cooperation to the government or that he was simply ineligible for a Rule 35 reduction. And in fact, the government's attempt to cast this case as one in which petitioner is somehow just dissatisfied that he didn't get this Rule 35 reduction finds no record support. Petitioner Hutchings pled guilty to a life sentence, and he discarded his only chance to leave prison before he died. And he did so as a result of his lawyer's conceitedly and materially erroneous advice. That is a meaningful deprivation of his constitutional right to effective assistance of counsel. And, Your Honors, I see that I'm in my rebuttal time, so unless the court has any questions, I reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartzler.
Thank you again. Let me begin by clarifying a couple of points. Opposing counsel just said that we agree that the attorney erred, and that's not quite correct. I mean, we say in our brief that he didn't provide perfect counsel, but that's not the standard in which we would review whether or not he was effective. He clearly advised Mr. Hutchings what sentence he would receive if he pled guilty and what sentence he would receive if he went to trial. He accurately evaluated the case. He accurately evaluated the sentence. He, in fact, told him what he could receive, and it was spot on in terms of what he could receive if he would cooperate 20 to 25 years. And you'll see the calculation in our brief, which is probably about right, had he adequately cooperated. The only error he made, if you can call it an error, and I don't mean to suggest that this was an error of constitutional magnitude or even close to it, was he didn't explain that the cooperation has to be satisfactory, substantial assistance to the satisfaction of the government, and the judge would ultimately evaluate it.
But well, here's the problem, though. His affidavit didn't address the heart of Hutchinson's claim. There was no mention in the affidavit of cooperation, Rule 35, or the 20 to 25-year sentence. You think that's a problem?
No mention in...
in the affidavit of his lawyer, in Mr. Wirtz's affidavit, in terms of, the fact that Hutchinson claims that he was told that this was going to be on the quiet side, nobody was going to really know about this, that for politics, that kind of allegation, you would think that in an affidavit that counsel filed, counsel would address that. There's no mention of the cooperation, Rule 35, or the 20 to 25-year sentence in Mark Wirtz's affidavit.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, the affidavit is not adequate to address those issues.
So but don't you think at the very least he's entitled to an evidentiary hearing?
No.
So we can hear from Wirtz as to what he's told him?
Right. No, I don't, Your Honor. And part of the reason is because, for one, it puts at risk the presumption of verity. I mean, the argument that they've made in their reply brief is that, well, there are a lot of times that somebody pleads guilty and there'll be a 2255 motion, and that suggests that somehow there should be no presumption of verity, or the presumption of verity really not a serious issue. But if you focus on the two cases that they rely upon, Moore and Julian, those are cases in which there was a plea agreement. So those are the cases where you have 2255 problems, where there is a plea agreement, the plea agreement is acknowledged, and the lawyer has given incorrect advice, badly erroneous advice about the difference between pleading guilty and going to trial. Well, this is a case where there was no plea agreement. So the colloquy at Rule 11 is there is no plea agreement. There were no promises made. And Judge Koenig, to answer your question, the Rule 35 doesn't come up until sentencing, which is important because Mr. Hutchings was not cooperating at the time he pled guilty. You'll see, and Judge Williams, I hope you'll review these letters. You'll see in the letters, even if we get past the first stage, the effectiveness of the counsel, there was no prejudice here. This is a gentleman who wanted to plead guilty.
Oh, no, he kept saying. He wrote several letters to ask the court to sentence him. I mean, I understand that. It's just this issue of, what I think makes this different is, and I agree there should be a presumption on guilty pleas, otherwise people can just attack guilty pleas willy-nilly. But this is a little beyond that. I said what gives me discomfort is the fact that his lawyer doesn't make any reference to it at all, doesn't deny it, doesn't say, this never happened. That's a problem.
If you want my impression, it's that the lawyer didn't read the 2255. I mean, I thought the lawyer's affidavit seemed so general
that he just sort of
addressed those kind of standard questions that, as far as I could tell, he was mentally competent. As far as I knew, it was voluntary.
Right, and that's not even what's at issue in this case, necessarily. But, I mean, I understand he was generally going through the checklist, but there were specifics, and it is as if he had not read the allegations specifically that Hutchinson made.
Let's assume that there is no affidavit from the lawyer. Let's just disregard the affidavit. Because I don't think you can, well, the court has said, you can't resolve the factual issue. If a factual issue is presented, you can't resolve it just by accepting the credibility of the lawyer in an affidavit. So I would urge you to evaluate this case as though the lawyer had not filed an affidavit, as though the government had not filed an affidavit. Then the question is whether or not this 2255 petition establishes a factual issue that justifies a withdrawal of his guilty plea or dismissal of the sentence. And I suggest it doesn't. What they've done a nice job of is presenting this in comparison to Moore and Julian. Just let me read from their brief from page 13. Julian and Moore are thus united in holding that when an attorney provides incorrect information that alters a defendant's calculation of the risks of proceeding to trial versus pleading guilty, he performs in a manner below that of a reasonably competent defense attorney. Defendant's calculation. Incorrect information, so the defendant incorrectly calculates benefits of proceeding to trial versus pleading guilty or vice versa. Well, there was no incorrect calculation here. This was not a situation like Julian or Moore where the defense attorney gave calculation as to, or actually there was an agreement as to what the defendant would receive upon pleading guilty. There was no agreement upon pleading guilty. When he pled guilty, there was no suggestion that he was going to cooperate. The Rule 35 statement that you mentioned earlier is during the sentencing proceeding. And you recall from the record that after he pled guilty, then he signed the cooperation agreement. It was several weeks after he pled guilty. So focusing on the 2255 petition and in the Rule 11 colloquy, the plea of guilty, the issue was there any question as to whether the lawyer competently, effectively advised him as to what would happen? We know from this record, the lawyer told him what sentence he would receive if he pled guilty. That was correct. What sentence he would receive if he went to trial. That was correct. There was no distinction between the two. The cooperation, frankly, wouldn't have mattered whether he'd gone to trial or pled guilty. This reduction in sentence was not contingent on his guilty plea. The reduction in sentence was contingent on his adequacy of cooperation, on providing substantial assistance. Could have gotten that, he'd gone to trial. He had not cooperated or agreed to cooperate when he pled guilty. If he'd gone to trial, he could have had the same deal. So the lawyer, by complete contrast to the lawyers in Julian and Moore, gave him absolutely correct information about the consequences of going to trial or pleading guilty. That's why, Judge Williams, I hope that you'll consider evaluating the case without regard to that affidavit, as though the government hadn't filed it, because I agree it does not address those questions that you raise. But I don't think that should decide the case. I think what's at risk at this case is the presumption of verity. If you were to decide that this defendant was entitled to a hearing, despite having said at the Rule 11, I didn't get any promises, and then his claim of having received this supposed guarantee of a reduction of sentence, which he on appeal makes aligns with his guilty plea, and it's not aligned with the guilty plea. If you accept that contention, which, by the way, of course, only comes in after the Anders brief suggests that that's a possibility. Recall, this is a defendant who pled guilty, got sentenced, appealed, and then his lawyer filed an Anders brief saying there's really no basis to appeal. This is no non-frivolous issue unless a record can be developed that he was misadvised regarding the consequence of his guilty plea and the cooperation. Well, at that point, of course, he's disappointed because he learned that he was not going to get any credit for the supposed cooperation. But that's not grounds to disregard his sworn statement. And the other thing about the presumption of verity I think is valuable in this case is that the defendant doesn't explain. There's no explanation whatsoever. I mean, you validly criticize the lawyer's affidavit. Defendant's 2255 has no explanation whatsoever as to why, when he promised, did he commit perjury when he was under oath at the Rule 11 colloquy? Why is there no explanation as to why he could say to the judge under oath, no, there are no promises, we have no plea agreement, and later on file this 2255?
Well, I think the argument is it was all on the QT. It's supposed to keep it quiet.
Why is it? How can it be on the QT when they mention it sentencing hearing?
That's the argument. It might work well if you were an elected judge or an elected prosecutor, but I don't think it's going to work too well in federal court.
Well, it shouldn't work also because there's no, obviously, as we say in our brief, no big secret. It's mentioned the possibility of a Rule 35 reduction at the sentencing hearing. I mean, and everybody knows that there's that possibility, that prospect. I don't think that would justify the absence of some explanation as to why he could. What he's saying is, I lied to the judge. I promised. I said there were no promises, and that was just false testimony. I see there are no further questions. Thank you very much.
How much time? You have 1 minute, Mr. Chairman.
1 minute. Let me be efficient then and start with the point the court just left on. I think we're sort of comparing apples and oranges here. Mr. Hartzler mentions that it couldn't have been a secret because it was mentioned at the sentencing hearing, the Rule 35. But there's no record support for the theory that Mr. Hutchings connected in his mind that off-the-cuff reference to a Rule 35 motion and the discussions that he had had with his attorney. Mr. Hutchings is not a lawyer. He never would have. Rule 35 wasn't mentioned before, and there's no reason why Mr. Hutchings would have understood that this Rule 35 meant the same thing that he had understood from his lawyer was a certainty. I also want to respond to the argument that, in fact, Mr. Hutchings didn't decide to cooperate until after he was sentenced. This never came up until after. In fact, if the court looks at the attorney's affidavit, Mr. Wirtz does say that on February 3rd, 2006, the date that Mr. Hutchings pled, right before that, they were discussing plea negotiations. And then moments later, the parties went into the courtroom and Mr. Hutchings entered a plea. Well, to my mind, that suggests that Mr. Hutchings was very influenced by the content of the discussions that he had with his attorney regarding the plea. And as to the request that the court decide this case as if the lawyer had not submitted an affidavit, I'm not sure what the basis for that request is, Your Honors. The lawyer did submit an affidavit, and the facts that he did not address can be noticed and taken account of by this court, and I think to do otherwise would be to just ignore the record, and I ask that you not do that.
And I just have one question. He had a series of drug convictions in the 80s, and then he had this Texas conviction in 92. Do you know if these other convictions were federal or state?
He had four prior federal convictions, Your Honor.
Thank you. And you took this case by appointment?
I did, sir.
You have the appreciation of the court and the fine representation of your client. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.